What's going on, everybody? Thanks for tuning into the J-Ham Special, where I love to talk about Magic the Gathering, Warhammer 40K, Dungeons & Dragons, and other aspects of my nerdy life. My name is John. I'll be your host for this episode of Warhammer Wednesday. We're going to bring you some Warhammer Kill Team content, and I specifically want to talk about my favorite missions to play when you're using the core rulebook. I'm going to go over my three favorite missions for new and even experienced players to play, and just the ones that I've had a lot of fun getting to do when I'm playing with my friends or even if I'm doing Sad Hammer. So, without further ado, let's dive right in. So, just a little bit of a caveat or explanation kind of at the start here. I do want to let you know that I have officially played every single mission that you can find in the core book for Kill Team. I'm still fairly new to Elites. I'm still fairly new to Commander, so I haven't had a chance to try those ones out. So, I'll probably do an episode around the favorites that I have out of those books and even other packets as well. You know, the core rulebook, that's one of the ways you can start playing missions for those of you that are new in the game. So you get your data sheets, you get your missions, you get your rules, you know, you get your specialisms, and you even get the narrative play option too if you want to build a campaign out of it. The core rulebook's got pretty much everything you need. It's a one-stop shop if you wanted to start playing Kill Team. Just, there are several other supplements out there that can be good that I will review in the future. And there's also other tournament packets made by tournament organizers. Most recent one that I've looked at and messed around with was the Zenith packet made by the Command Point. They do a podcast and a YouTube. Pretty great. I'd check it out. It's more of that match play side of things. So, you know, everybody's kind of got an equal footing wherever you go. So if you like that aspect of the game, then definitely go that route. So something you're going to realize is that out of the three missions that I'm going to choose, none of them are match play missions. And that's because I'm not saying match play missions are bad. I think they're great. They have their specific role in the game, and you can play with two to four players if you really want to. But for me, it just seems a little too sterile. It seems too straightforward, and it doesn't have enough character to make it really stand out in my memory compared to some of the other ones I'm going to mention, which are open play and narrative play missions. So if you do like match play, definitely check out the ones we have, you know, in the book. They can be fun. But honestly, I check out some of the different tournament organizers. They sometimes have a little bit more fun ways to do match play missions and add that character to it, but still keep it equal across the board. And finally, I do want to let you guys know that the majority of the missions that I have played out of this book have been Sad Hammer, where I'm just playing against myself. But I've had the opportunity of actually playing all of these ones I'm mentioning today with friends, with opponents, whenever I've dropped on the table with them. So, you know, I do have some experience with playing more than just by myself. I don't think that's necessarily skewed it. I'm more looking at an objective standpoint of why there are certain reasons I like these missions. So with that, let's go in. First mission, Ambush. The way the Ambush mission works is a narrative play mission, and this is the one that I usually use to teach anybody that I am teaching Kill Team. I think it's cool because it's got a narrative aspect to it, so you can kind of get them in. If they're more of a lore hound or they want to have that story in their mind, especially if I'm bringing over from something like D&D, they might like this a little bit better, but it's still got that Warhammer skirmish experience that you get for Kill Team all wrapped up into it, and it's a simple enough objective to understand. The mission, it lasts for 5 rounds, so you and your opponent get a chance to do all five rounds of your phases, essentially, and one of you is the attacker, the other one is the defender. Now, the attacker-defender roles, that's always kind of, I had a little bit of a question on it, on how they worded it, but essentially just say you have somebody who is trying to be escaping, you have somebody who is trying to stop them from escaping. That's the whole point of the ambush mission. You set up on your rectangle-sized board or whatever space you have available for Kill Team, and then you put one team on one side, and then you put the other team kind of wrapped around the other board edge. And the whole goal is you have to get at least half of your Kill Team off of the board edge, and you win the game if you are the defender. If you are the attacker, you have to try and stop your opponent from escaping, and either A, just hold off half their team from leaving during that 5 rounds, or completely obliterate their team to the point where they cannot get more than half their team off the battlefield. It's real straightforward and real easy. I mean, and I like it because you don't have to track the victory points where you're holding rejections and saying, oh, well, I've got victory points here, or, you know, I did this secondary mission, so I've got victory points here, and trying to juggle all that. Instead, it's just straightforward, and you can say, listen, get half your team off the board, you win the game. If you don't, I win the game. I've had a lot of fun thematically with it too, kind of saying that it's, I built a narrative around it. I'll explain it here in a little while, but you know, it's very easy to build the narrative saying, listen, we ambushed your team. You know, we were hunting you guys down and we found you, and now you've got to try and escape us. You know, the hunter becomes the hunted, you know, whatever you decide to say on that. It's a lot of fun, really straightforward mission. Try ambush out. It's pretty decent. The other thing too that is cool with these narrative missions is there are some special tactics, which unfortunately I don't have on me right now, but you have an attacker tactic and you have a defender tactic. So you have a tactic to use as far as trying to stop your opponent's models from escaping, and some to help you try and escape if you need to. So that's one cool thing that when you are playing the narrative missions, they usually give you extra tactics you can spend your command points on outside the normal core ones and your faction ones. The next mission that's up there on my favorites list, if I'm not teaching somebody with ambush, I love to use the assassinate mission. Now, the assassinate mission is really, again, kind of straightforward, and I think it's cool thematically. It's a narrative play mission, again, and the way it works is you have your attacker and your defender. Your defender has their leader in, like, a small little center of their deployment zone in their own little bubbles where they have to you have to deploy them at. So it is in view of your opponents, more or less. You have to keep your leader alive. That's the whole focus there. The other team, the attackers, they have to kill the leader. And that's the whole point of that mission. You know, if the defenders kill the leader, then they win the game. If you're, you know, did I say that right? Yeah, no, if the attackers kill the leader, they win the game. Defenders, if you lose your leader, you lose the game. You know, if you last for 5 rounds without your leader dying, you win the game. Again, there's some different tactics you can use tied to it. I think it's only like 1 or maybe 2 command points. I think it's 1 apiece, but there's 1 for each side again. I think like the leader one also makes it like it gives them the lookout serve from the big 40k game, where it makes it harder for your opponent to shoot at them if they're not like the closest model, or if he's around another model, he gets like a increase to his save or a decrease to the opponent's hit roll. So yeah, I mean, I'm sorry I don't have that on me, but it is another cool mission to play if you're wanting to start in. And then finally, Covert War. Covert War is kind of like the kill team version of the Only War mission that you get out, like the core rules for Big 40K. I remember in 8th edition, that was, they had Only War. I think now it's called Eternal War. It might still be Only War, but you know, effectively what it is, it's just an open play mission that you can drop into. And this is one that I wouldn't necessarily say you need to teach somebody. The way they position in the book is they treat it as if this is the first mission you should play, period. And it can be. It can be good if you want to go that route. I know that's kind of one of the ways I literally started with it, but I feel like the other two narrative missions are better ways to jump people into the game. There's a little bit of variability in the mission itself. The way it works is you can play with as many players as you really want. Each player, effectively, they get 1 objective token, which is cool. So everybody you bring, you want to make sure that everybody has like an objective token. This could be cool if you say, hey, you have your faction, maybe make like your faction objective token. Or I have mine, and so let's do, you know, my faction. So if I'm playing like Imperial Guard, I can have like an Imperial Guard themed, you know, token. If I'm playing the Astartes, I can have an Astartes themed token. If you're playing Gene Stealer, then do a Gene Stealer, or Orc could be Orc. I mean, whatever you decide to go with, you know, that's just a cool little thought of mine that you maybe can do with your friends. But yeah, you can play with 2 people, you can play up to 4 people, heck, you can play up to 6 people if you really want to get up there, but I've never played with more than 3, so, you know, good luck on that. Okay, so I took pictures of it, I looked back up the rules for Covert War. So the way that Covert War works is, let me get it here again, you assemble your kill team, so you're going to take, usually they recommend a Battleforge kill team, but heck, you can do whatever you want, it's open play, so whatever you and your opponents agree on, go with it. But set up your kill teams. They recommend trying to use 10 or fewer models on each kill team for this specific mission, especially if it's your first time through, but you can throw that out the window if you really want. You set the battlefield, so you create the battlefield, set up all the terrain that you need to, then each player will roll 2d6, And then re-roll the tied scores. Then the highest score has the greatest strategic advantage, and then the lowest score gets the least strategic advantage, and then so on and so forth. You just continue to go on that route. And then each player takes a turn putting down the objective tokens, going from the greatest to the least strategic advantage people. And then, each objective token has to be like 6 inches from the battlefield edge, and I believe like 8 inches away from other objective markers. Let me see. Yep, that's right. And then, you control that objective marker if you have more models within 2 inches of that actual objective marker. So I know it's kind of bland, but effectively, the more models you have around that objective marker, you technically control it. It says you can use the scouting phase if you want to. They tell you what page to go on to, but it is optional if you want to use it or not. Scouting phase just adds a little bit more to the narrative or a little bit to the randomness of this mission. So it gives you more playability if you decide to throw that in there. And then you deploy. You know, you set up all your players with the least strategic advantage with the most. And then you take in turn to deploy each model that you need to. The battle length, it's still 5 battle rounds, just like pretty much every other mission in this book. And then your victory conditions, this is where it's cool. It's got its own random objective table. So the person that has the least strategic advantage, so that means the guy that rolled the least amount on their 2d6, they get to kind of do a lot of things on this mission. You get to roll in the primary objective table. And there's 3 different objective or victory conditions you can meet. The first one is if you roll a 1 or a 2, you're going to get to secure the battlefield. At the end of the battle, each objective marker that you control is worth 2 victory points, provided you control it. So it means if I have 2 guys around a victory or objective marker and my opponent has 1 guy, I control that one, I'm gonna get 2 points at the end of the battle round. If I'm playing with 2 people, there's only 2 objective markers, so there could be possibly a tied game. If we're playing with 3 or 4 people, then there is a little bit more of an opportunity to have more people come out on top, depending on how you position your models. Retrieve the cash. This one's a really fun one. The way it works is if you roll a 3 or a 4, at the start of the first battle round, before anybody moves in the initiative phase to start, randomly select 1 objective marker, remove the other objective markers from the battlefield. So if it's just me and 1 other person, we're going to just remove 1 of those at random. But if we're playing with 4 people, we're going to choose 1 objective marker at random and then get rid of all the other 3. And then whoever controls it at the end of the game gets 6 victory points and technically wins the game. And then finally, the last one, if you get a 5 or a 6, you get the infiltrate mission. And then at the end of the battle, each objective marker in an opponent's deployment zone is worth 2 victory points to the player who controls it. A player that can control an objective marker in their own deployment zone, but will score no victory points for doing so. So if we have objective markers that are in the deployment zone of each other, there is an opportunity for you to go score some points, but if you're controlling your own, you're not going to get anything for it. So essentially it pushes you to say, well, you need to charge in and actually be a bit more aggressive and try to take your opponent's markers. I really like Covert War as a pickup mission, not necessarily saying that this is a great introductory mission. It can be good, especially if you say, hey, we're only going to take 1 mission out of this book. Well, this is the one I would say take. If you're not going to look at the narrative, you're not going to look at the match or anything else, look at the Covert War mission. But for example, if you and your opponents are saying like, hey, we've played the ambush mission, we've played the assassinate mission, you know, what should we do from here? You could choose one of the other narrative plays, but I think this one's a really fun one to just kind of, if you throw the scouting phase in there, it's just one extra thing, but adds a little bit more randomness. And it could add more of an advantage to one player over the other. And of course, the randomness of what objective you're going to get. You can't necessarily tune your list to say, oh, well, I'm bringing an all killy team where I'm going to be taking out my opponent's, you know, warlord. I'm going to assassinate there. So I'm going to bring a bunch of snipers that deal mortal wounds or maybe shoot really well. You know, that's just my thought process on it. So it's great for pickup. But yeah. Those are my 3 favorite missions out of the Kill Team core rules. I'll probably make one in the future whenever I have a chance to play more of the Elites missions and more of the Commanders missions. But as of right now, those are kind of my 3 go-to that I really enjoy. And I'm honestly thinking about doing a battle report. Speaking of which, I did mention I was going to talk to you about how I kind of link the narrative play missions together. Now, you can go to the very back of the book and look at how they set up campaigns for Kill Team. It's got a lot of words to it. It's got a lot of moving pieces and usually requires you to be having consistent games with your friends. So, you know, kind of like a D&D campaign, you might want to make sure everybody's on board with trying that play style. But the way that I like to do it is kind of set up a narrative in my head. And almost like when I bought the First Strike box, they had three different missions that taught you how to play the game piece by piece. And it was really cool because you got to kind of learn a little bit more about the games and put them together. And then they said, oh, well, this is how it started. Like the Poxwalkers kind of, they dropped and started infecting people. So you sent out a scout squad and then you kind of built up and then they had their Reaver Sergeant go into combat with the Poxwalkers to try and take them down. And depending on how that one turned out, you went to the next mission where you got to play with a mix of models. We had some Reavers and you had some Intercessors, and then you brought everything kind of all together. You can go that route if you want to with the missions. I would say just do different point levels. Maybe say, oh, we're going to do a 25-point team here, and the next one we're going to go 50-point, and then we're going to go up to 100-point, which is the desired Battleforge army for core. But the other way you can look at it is just say, oh, well, we're both playing 100-point teams, so let's start off and say, hey, this mission, we're going to start off with the assassinate mission. And let's just say that, again, I'll say my Storm Guard Scions dropped, and they had the target priority of taking down a Space Marine captain or Space Marine sergeant that the Imperium believed was falling to chaos. So they dropped in there, and this kind of gives me an example of why it should be blue versus blue and why it's kill team as far as a small covert option, because you are fighting the other forces of Imperium. So they go through, depending on how that mission stands out, you either win or you lose. The next mission then is the ambush mission. So again, I'd still be playing my Scions, and then my opponent would be playing the Astartes again. And this time around, after the assassination attempt, whether it was successful or not, a group of Astartes located the Scions and are now trying to kill them and stop them from escaping so they can be punished on their world. So that's an easy way to kind of blend those narratives together. I mean, you can honestly go whichever way you want to. You can start off with the ambush mission first if you want to, and then move on. Maybe your Scions are ambushing Space Marines and saying, oh, well, they're taking them down to try and get rid of, like, the force that's supposed to be acting as, like, the overwatch for the Space Marine Sergeant and his force down below. And then you have the assassinate mission. And then maybe you do the open war mission where you're just like, okay, well, now it's kind of all out covert war, just battling each other. Maybe you have to retrieve a fallen ally. Maybe that's the retrieval cache. Maybe you have to try and get some ammunition or maybe some evidence that would help support the Scions and their reason for being there in the first place. So yeah, that's how you can kind of do narrative play. If you guys have any questions, comments, concerns, hit me up at thejamspecial@gmail.com. That's the official email, or jamspecial on Twitter. That's the official Twitter for the podcast. Until the next time, appreciate you guys, and we'll see you on the next Warhammer Wednesday. Bye.